Okay. Let me identify it by saying this is the, what is this, the third, Mr. Harrell?
I think it is.
Third in a series of interviews dealing with 4-H and the 4-H Honor Club with Mr. L.R. Harrell as the star of the show. Today, we're pleased to have several distinguished guests with us who have been very much involved in 4-H, the 4-H Honor Club, and many activities, as a matter of fact, in 4-H over the years. And, of course, Mr. L.R. Harrell, who is Mr. 4-H in North Carolina, and very likely, I suppose, you could say the same thing about the entire nation, for that matter, because he was one of the instrumental founders of this great organization, is here with us. And Mr. Harrell was our longtime state 4-H leader, now retired. At least retired from the active title of 4-H leader, but very much active in 4-H. And Mr. Harrell has some of his friends gathered around our table today. Mr. Bob Hilton is chairman of the board of the 4-H Honor Club. Merle Swicegood, district agent, who's been very much involved in 4-H over the years. Mrs. Cornelia Graham, who was one of the pioneers in the 4-H Development Fund and very active over the years in the North Carolina Grange. Dr. Barry Miller, a dentist from Charlotte, formerly from Iredell County, a 4-H'er. Mr. Lyman Dixon, 4-H Specialist Emeritus. And we will have Mrs. Margaret Clark, who is also retired 4-H Specialist, and Mrs. Mary Emma Butts, a wife of the former Secretary of Agriculture and a native of North Carolina, with us a little bit later on in the program when they arrive from the airport. First of all, I'd like to call on Bob Hilton to talk a little bit about this particular project, Bob, anything you have on your mind. But a lot of people have said to me, why are you doing these things? And I said, I don't really know. It's fun to talk with Mr. Harrell and to reminisce about 4-H, but maybe you can put it in more specific terms.
Thank you, Wally. That's primarily why we're doing it. It's fun to get up with Mr. Harrell and talk about 4-H and things that have gone on in our history of 4-H in North Carolina. The idea of this oral taping session is basically an Honor Club idea. We were sitting around one day at a meeting and decided it would be a good idea to gather together people from over the state that had been instrumental in forming the 4-H program and active in the 4-H program, and just sit down and kind of discuss things over a table and see if we could jog each other's memory. And of course, we had to think of Mr. 4-H as the centerpiece of that. And so we broached Mr. Harrell with the idea. And he was a little hesitant at first, but he came around for us and decided that this would be a very good project. Now, I might tell you that in keeping with this oral meeting, the Honor Club and the North Carolina 4-H office and North Carolina State University have undertaken a project of a 4-H archives. And presently, material, tapes, and so forth are being stored in D.H. Hill Library and being looked after by the NC State Archivist. And ultimately, we hope to have these and other things on display in Jane S. McKimmon, the Center for Continuing Education. So far, we have proceeded to secure the display cases and the agreement with Jane S. McKimmon, and now the Honor Club and the State Office is actively involved in securing pertinent material and records and pens and tapes from over the state to include in this as part of our 4-H heritage. So we came upon the idea, and I might mention that Dr. Jim Clark has been very instrumental in all of this, and of course is a former 4-H'er and a member of the North Carolina State faculty, that we could possibly have some small portions of these tapes edited and available at the display site for pertinent facts. Mr. Harrell may want to talk about Millstone 4-H camp or something. And we might have a display of Millstone memorabilia, and this would be very appropriate. Mm-hmm. So this was one of our ulterior motives in it, other than getting together and having a good time. The tapes, as you may have indicated, will be filed in the archives in their entirety, and should this progress in years to come, certain portions would be edited and used as necessary. So that's about all I've got on that.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, and I think we can see right away all of us here and the others who participate in the program, and hopefully thousands who will hear, especially Mr. Harrell, talking about the various phases of 4-H, some that were and some that are and some that will likely be at some stage or other. And, of course, Dr. Clark, being in the Department of English, puts us all on our toes to speak well and do the best job in the interview and all like that. Bob told me before we started our recording session that when he talked about why we were here was all he was going to say, and that's sort of a challenge to me, Bob, so I'm going to I'm going to grab the gauntlet with you and ask you about your background. Were you a 4-H'er yourself? I assume you were.
Yes, originally from Catawba County. And I'm one of the unfortunate ones that just got started in 4-H before this giant over here decided he was going to retire and leave after 37 years of service. Or is it 37 years, 4 months, and 3 days? But I grew up on a farm in Catawba County and was involved in the changing of the 4-H program from when it came out of the schools into the community-type club. Uh-huh. And while the numbers suffered, I think the quality probably improved over the years with this change, because you got rid of all these people that wanted to get out of class and go to a 4-H meeting and really got down to the people that were interested in 4-H work. And I was tapped in the Honor Club in 1967, and as Mr. Harrell and the other founding people of the Honor Club put it some 35 years ago, maybe 40 now, Mr. Harrell, it's been quite a while, 1931 to be exact, the Honor Club serves as a place where former 4-H'ers can still meet, exchange ideas, and be actively involved in 4-H work for their entire life, mm-hmm. because membership is for their entire life. And I might mention, just for Mr. Harrell's benefit, that he is one of our few honorary charter members that are still with us. And he manages to make it to conference every year, every other year, mm-hmm. and it's always a pleasure to have him with us.
Mr. Harrell, the Honor Club sort of become a club within 4-H, hasn't it?
Well, the Honor Club, as he stated there, was set up primarily to maintain interest in 4-H on the part of former 4-H members. And the more I meet with that group and the more I listen to people around this table here, the more I am convinced that any program that is worthwhile lives in perpetuity in the lives of people who are members of that organization. And I think that is certainly true of this group around the table here today, and certainly true of the ones who have participated in this tape recording of a 4-H in the making.
Well, of course, in order to be in the Honor Club, you'd have to be in 4-H, but only the cream of the crop, you know, ends up in the Honor Club. Maybe that's one of the reasons it has grown, like you said.
Well, I think, let's go back to the very beginning. Originally, the Honor Club was made up of delegates who had been selected to attend National 4-H Camp, mm-hmm. that being considered at the time the highest honor that a club member could win. And since that time, of course, it's been broadened, realizing that in that top group of four people at that time, you would leave out a tremendous number of people if you limited it to four people a year. So, over the years, the Honor Club has expanded and broadened its scope to take in 4-H members. But to get in the Honor Club now, you don't just walk in there on popularity. You become a member because the membership of the Honor Club recognizes you as an outstanding individual, an individual who has made a real contribution to the 4-H program, and they think an individual who will help to perpetuate the aims and the objectives of 4-H.
Right, excellent. That's why I get such an inferiority complex every time we do one of these things, because I was never in the Honor Club. Merle Swicegood, district agent, is, I suppose, still very much involved with 4-H right now. Merle, are you?
Oh, yes, and one of the highlights of all of my career, I guess, was last fall when I went to Chicago. And Wally, you know, when I was 10 years old, my agent said if I worked real hard as a 4-H'er, I might get to go to Chicago, and I had to wait a long time. In fact, it's too long to remember, but it was worth waiting and working for, and it was such a thrill to see these young people in Chicago at the National Club Congress.
Well, that is quite a thrill, and over the years, Mr. Harrell, we have the North Carolina Club Congress now, but it wasn't always called a Congress here.
It's had three names. It started out as a 4-H short course, and at that time we set up programs here at the campus, at the college, for the club members to study specific things. One might, Rudy Pate, for example, his short course project was news writing. He now is one of the outstanding writers and leaders. And then there was another one on canning, another one on dairying, another one on something else. That was the beginning. And then we went from that into the 4-H Club Week program, which more or less left the project activity phase out and put into the program such things as recreation, demonstration teams and judging teams and that type of thing, and table manners and things that they couldn't very well receive in their local club meetings. And then somebody comes along here after my retirement.
Well, you don't think they double-crossed you, do you?
Well, no, they just, you make progress when you make changes. But then we start out, this was named our Club Week program here. It was after National 4-H Club Camp. And then this, the State Congress, I think, I don't know, was named after the National Club Congress in Chicago. Personally, I prefer the State 4-H Club Week. But anyhow, that's neither here nor there.
What about the national? I think we could, in terms of, so that all of us can understand whether we're in 4-H or not, it's more or less a convention. It's a gathering of those involved. Was the national meeting always called Congress, or did it have some other name?
As far as I know, it was always called the Club Congress. Now, that started out with Mr. Wilson inviting a number of the livestock exhibitors at the livestock show in Chicago for a dinner. And that was the beginning of that. And then it grew from that into where the different business organizations put up money to bring people to the Club Congress in Chicago for a week or 4 days or whatever it happened to be. And they were selected on the basis of their superior, I say, efforts in 4-H back in their respective states.
Merle,
both of these are, of course, this one here at State Club Week, as I call it, and Club Congress. They are selected on the basis of the fact that they have done an outstanding club work, a program. Same thing at Washington for the National 4-H Camp. And in other words, all three of these things we're talking about are set up to recognize and award outstanding 4-H members.
Let me get back to Merle Swisegood for a moment here and find out about her 4-H career. I assume it started when you were 10, Merle. You referred to that a minute ago.
Correct.
Well, what were some of your early involvements, activities, projects, and so forth?
I lived on a dairy farm, Wally, and, of course, cows were important. So I showed calves and had calves as a project. And I was interested in clothing and foods, and we had many projects that we could take. And living in the country at that time in the early 40s, I was terribly lonely as a country girl. And 4-H was just the best friend that I had. So I spent a lot of time on project work. And I was excited over the possibilities and what I saw 4-H doing for young people. To me, it just opened lots of doors.
Well, do you suppose it was influential in the fact that you went into agent work and to extension teaching and so forth?
Very definitely, Wally. I planned to be a medical doctor. That was my original intent at entering UNCG. And finally, in extension, I did earn a doctorate, but not in medical fields, but in the human relations field. But it did influence my career choice. I just couldn't leave extension in 4-H. And I saw an opportunity to be of help and of service, and this was the thing that I was looking for.
Mr. Harrell referred to change a few minutes ago. Have you seen much basic change? I'm not talking about the organization of 4-H, but go back to the boys and girls, to the young people involved. Do you find that a 10-year-old of 1977 would pretty much have the same ambitions, ideas, goals, and so forth as a 10-year-old in the 40s?
Basically, I don't believe we have changed a lot, but the 10-year-old of today is much more sophisticated than a 10-year-old of the 40s. Their vocabulary is greater. They have seen many things through television. Their horizons have been extended far beyond what a 10-year-old would have been in the 30s and 40s. They also have traveled more, but I find them just as hungry to learn to do things. And people are just as needed and just as important. Nothing takes the place of personal contact and having a good teacher. And that, I think, is what Extension has provided through the years.
Very well put. She turned out to be a pretty good 4-H'er, wouldn't you say, Ms. Harrell?
Absolutely.
I think he had to think about that.
Well, I was trying to think of a word that would adequately describe this girl. I remember though when she was 10 and when the cave was so much larger than she was.
And they could pull so hard.
Absolutely.
What kind,
In fact, I have a mashed toe right now, Wally, from that cow, and he remembers consoling me when that cow stepped on my toe. And, you know, the tears were just about to come, and a part of showmanship, of course, was the person showing the calf. And you just didn't let the tears come, even if you lost in the contest or had a stepped-on toe.
Mr. Harrell, you must get a little extra measure of satisfaction, though, out of a 4-H-er actually going into a career that involves 4-H, such as Dr. Merle Swisegood has done.
Well, I hope we didn't steer any of them in the wrong course.
Apparently not.
Well.
Mrs. Cornelia Graham, I mentioned, is here with us, and she has been very much involved in 4-H. And before I get into the development fund here, Cornelia, I'd like to ask a little bit about your background. Were you also a 4-H girl?
Also a 4-H girl, and I started my 4-H career about the same time Mr. Harrell started his. I as a 4-H'er, and he as a 4-H agent in the 20s. And I don't remember much about being a 4-H club member except camping in the summertime, and that's when camping was really camping.
Uh-huh.
We slept in a tent on the ground on straw.
Yeah.
And that was really camping in the primitive sense.
Where was this?
At the Lybrook Farm, was it?
In Forsyth County.
Forsyth County, I was there.
In the meadow. Nothing there, no buildings, nothing there but tents. And my husband-to-be was also there. He was from Rowan County, but we did not know each other at that time. We met each other about 15 years later and married. And we have two sons, both of whom are Honor Club members, by the way. So we are a 100% 4-H family.
Well, that's, you know, I was asking Ms. Terrell about the satisfaction of seeing somebody like Merle, of course, enter into it as a career. That must be fun. This is something I have not had the opportunity of doing, to see my children become 4-H'ers. I wish that they had, but they didn't, and I don't suppose they will now. But that must give you a lot of satisfaction, too, Cornelia.
It certainly does.
Tell us a little bit about this 4-H Development Fund. Who had the idea for this? How did it get started and so forth?
I'm not sure. I'm certain Mr. Harrell could answer that question. I was in on some of the beginnings, and I think one of the things in my life that I am the proudest of, in fact, maybe the proudest of any accomplishment I have achieved, is the fact that I did help sign the charter of incorporation for the 4-H Development Fund. Mr. Harrell was there, and he can tell you who actually began it. I'm not certain. I wasn't right there on the very beginning of the idea.
It was probably his idea.
It probably was.
Well, it was. We were desperate. We had absolutely no support for any phase of the 4-H program. Here, one company would sponsor a trip to National Club Congress, and here was another project equally as good, daring one of them in the beginning there, because that was primarily a livestock deal in Chicago. So I decided that if we were going to stay in, that we needed some support from the outside, and this was, you know, you copy ideas. Of course, Chicago is based on support from outside, and so was this 4-H Development Fund. The first meeting of this kind was in room 107 in Rick's Hall in my office, around a table about 4 by 6. We didn't have large conference tables then, and there were 6 or 8 people there, and I don't know all of them. Mr. Dave Weaver was one there. But when I suggested that we raise $1 million, I thought all 6 of them would fall flat on the floor.
What year was that again, Mr. Harrell?
I couldn't tell you right now. I'll have to look in the book, but that's been a long time ago. But it's significant. The fact is that that $1 million was raised and more, too.
Did you have a whole lot of money sitting in the room that day, or?
As the best I can recall, there was $10.
Well, that really was a challenge. How'd you go about raising it? Or Cornelia, were you involved in that?
As I said, I'm not exactly sure when I became involved, but I do know that I was involved at the time the Charter of Incorporation was undertaken, and so that was bound to have been in the early days.
It was. Well, the development program, actually, we decided we'd go ahead with it. They told me that, like they told me at the church, about $1 million. We don't think you can do it, but we'd like to see you try it. we organized the this on the, we called in the specialist group, representatives of the county agents and home agents association for a larger meeting that looked than the original meeting. And we finally arrived at the conclusion that we, and then we invited the group from over here in the development office to sit in with us on this. And we decided and finally worked out a plan on an allotment basis with every county on the basis of its membership in 4-H would be asked to raise a certain amount of money. Mm-hmm. And basically, I think that's still a plan still goes, and I think that just about every county raised this quarter, some of them much more, and that's basically the way it is. And everybody, club members, agents, specialists, administrative officers, all had a part in this development fund, because the main thing we tried to do was to sell them on the basis of the needs of this program, and that it was for them and for their boys and girls. So I think we did well with it, and I don't think that there was any complications or anything that would keep now. And I'm going to use a big letter now. The 4-H'ers and their friends can raise $1 million in North Carolina in 2 years if they want to.
How long did it take you to get that million originally?
Basically, I don't remember. I doubt if we would really know when, but it wasn't too hard to get.
I know that there's been a tremendous investment in youth. How was some of this? How has it been used over the years? Well, what have you done with the money?
Ask Lyman Dixon over there. He stayed 10 years after I left.
Okay, that's a good point. Lyman, of course, just retired, although Mr. Harold said that that's not the word. He said when you retire, as young as Lyman is, that's a retread.
Yeah.
Now, and what'd you say? You have to watch out for the blowout?
Yeah, that's the only difference. Basically, that first thing was set up on the basis of scholarships, on the basis of the 4-H camp program and leadership training. Now, other things perhaps have been added.
May I add, Wally, that I think that we could sum up the things that the 4-H Development Fund does by saying that it picks up the tab for projects and for recognition that taxpayers' money cannot be used for. This was really the need that we needed to step in there and recognize outstanding 4-H's with awards that had to come from the private sector.
Lyman, I suppose then you'd have to credit the 4-H Development Fund then with a great deal of the success to 4-H itself then in our state, wouldn't you?
Definitely. I think, like Mr. Harold, if it hadn't been for the 4-H Development Fund, I don't know at what stage we would be in the progress of the 4-H program, because as Ms. Graham has already alluded to, there was no public monies at all used for anything except the salaries and materials the agents needed to conduct the 4-H program. Mm-hmm. And I just think it was so wonderful that we had an opportunity with business and interested individuals and friends of 4-H that through the development fund, money could be raised to help maybe an outstanding youngster come to State 4-H Club Week and maybe get out of his own home environment for change, which is growth in itself to be able to come, or help a youngster go, outstanding youngster to go to Chicago. It's just been great. There's so many things that the 4-H Development Fund has done in helping the camp programs and helping the scholarships of one various kind, one of many kinds, and more awards for the youngsters that do the real outstanding jobs. I don't know where we'd have been without the Development Fund.
Is it just now? Are the monies that are now used for this purpose just coming from, say, the interest that has been accrued from that original fundraising, or is it still coming in today?
Still raising money.
Okay. So the 4-H Development Fund is an active and ongoing thing then, is that right, Cornelia?
I would say there have been two financial drives. The first was $1 million goal, which was met. And then some 3 to 4 years ago, another goal of $750,000 was set, and that is nearly completed at this point. So those two drives are almost $2 million.
Right. Do you have any grandchildren yet, Cornelia?
I have four.
Are any of those old enough to be 4-H's yet?
Be 2 years until the oldest one will be old enough to be a 4-H'er, and I want to be live to be the grandmother of a 4-H'er.
And me, too, to be the great-grandfather.
All right. Well, that's going to be fantastic with three generations of Grahams there as 4-H'ers. That is really something to look forward to. I can understand your enthusiasm along that line. What were your sons? You said about the only thing you can really remember about 4-H as a member yourself was the camping program. What were your sons most actively involved in?
Well, of course, I've always lived on a dairy farm, and that's where they were reared, and so they were quite active in dairying enterprises and projects with their calves and their cows and showing and everything that goes along with dairying.
Well, I think this is interesting. Dr. Barry Miller from Charlotte, who's a dentist over there, is here with us, and he was a 4-H'er too. Barry, everybody we talk to seems to have gotten started in 4-H and dairying. Now, don't tell me that you were involved in dairying, too.
Well, I specialized, so my wife says. Yes, I started in dairying.
Okay, is that something? Now, what do we have? Well, what county were you from?
Iredell.
Does everybody have to be from Iredell County?
Davidson and Chatham, even though we're famous scratches.
Very good. And you said Iredell, didn't you, Bob?
Catawba,
right. Okay.
And that's right across.
Yeah. Well, we got on talking about cows and dairying here, and it just seemed like everybody's involved there. Barry, what are some of your recollections of 4-H days when you remember?
Wally, first let me say how much we appreciate your personal interest in this. I think it's so tremendous that a person like you continues to be involved. And I want to say, as I always say to my wife when I have an opportunity to be with Mr. Harrell, what an inspiration he continues to be.
Right. Right?
A tremendous influence he has been across this state. My earliest recollections, I suppose, would be showing dairy cows at the local and state fair. Table manners, I remember at the state 4-H camp. The Camp Millstone, the conservation interests that everybody thinks is so new. Many, many years ago, Mr. Harrell had us involved right in the middle of conservation and the environment. And I very vividly remember the influence of that experience. Camp Swannanoa, the recreational programs that gave us insight to group activity and interpersonal relationships were very important. I could go on and on, Molly.
Well, it sounds like an interesting background view. At what stage, a lot of us here can point back to something that very likely influenced us in our careers. Like, for example, Mr. Harrell is responsible for me being a broadcaster because I came to Raleigh when I was in 4-H and was on his Saturday radio program, first time I was ever on the air. And, you know, been doing it ever since then. When did you decide that you wanted to be a doctor?
Well, actually, one of the 4-H camps had something to do with it, one of the health contests. Mm-hmm. We had a neighbor that in the country that was in dentistry and encouraged me in 4-H activities and other activities. And I pretty much had emulated this gent's life, and he was a great influence on me.
So I suspect that everybody in the room can point back to some phase of 4-H. It might not have been an organized 4-H project as such, but it did influence us. You know, Barry mentioned something about conservation, Mr. Harrell, and the fact that when we were youngsters, you were very much involved in and a believer and a teacher of good conservation practices. Why didn't we listen back then? I understand now that we got ourselves in trouble a few years ago, and if 30 or 40 years ago we knew that we had to conserve water and energy and food and keep clean air and the soil and everything else, where did we go wrong?
I wouldn't say that we went wrong at all. We just didn't go far enough. The beginning of this conservation program started out primarily with wildlife conservation, and it was sponsored by all people, an ammunition company, the Federal Cartridge Company, and they paid the expense for these boys and girls who attended this wildlife conservation conference. And at that time, we didn't have dirty water. We didn't have dirty air. We didn't ever anticipate that we would. Nobody seemed to think about that. We were, which is more or less typical of us now. We were thinking more about where we are now than where we want to go.
Uh-huh.
But that was a good program, and it did a lot for the boys and the girls who came in there. But that was started out primarily as a conservation of wildlife, and the people who were furnishing the ammunition to kill off the live wildlife were interested in that, maybe to preserve wildlife so they could keep on selling ammunition.
Right. Yeah, well, it might be, and I think that those companies are still very much involved.
Oh yes, they're still supporting it. Yes.
Barry, we have a lot of 4-H clubs in Raleigh, and I suppose you have them in Charlotte. Now, this is totally different from when I was growing up as a 4-H'er. There were no 4-H clubs in Raleigh in the 40s. I feel sure. I haven't looked that up, but that's been a change. Do you hear about or notice any activity in our largest city over there regarding 4-H?
Yes, I cannot tell you all of the exact number, but we have a large number of youngsters in the city involved. Horsemanship and the horse program is our largest. In that regard, we're just about to enter into the Charlottetown Mall, in the mall for a week, an exhibit of all of our programs sponsored by business and professional people in the community. So that we're lifting up right in the center of the shopping mall for a week the opportunities for youngsters to be involved in character development at 4-H Club.
You know, it was definitely a rural organization and rural only, Mr. Harold, when we were members. And what do you think of this change that has brought 4-H into the cities?
Well, as I said earlier, with change comes progress. Now, I would hope that with the change, we will still maintain the interest and give support to the rural boy and girl who are lacking somewhat in opportunities and have some opportunities far greater. But I think that the change, as I see it, will provide opportunities for boys and girls in the cities who otherwise did not have these opportunities. I think that if we follow through with it, that it's good.
Lyman, how did you get started in 4-H? What was your earliest recollection of it?
Well, I guess I'm the black sheep of this group, Wally.
Don't tell me you were never a 4-H member.
Well, first, I grew up in eastern North Carolina, and all this group comes from west of Lyman.
Okay.
Secondly, I was never a 4-H club member.
That's interesting.
That's unfortunate, but I remember the day that extension agent came to our high school in Greene County and gave a promotional talk on 4-H. And up to that time, we didn't have any 4-H in that section of the county.
Uh-huh.
And this was in April of 1938, and I finished high school in May of 1938.
Oh,
so I didn't
see.
Have much chance
right,
at
you sure
it.
Did.
So I never was a 4-H member, unfortunate, but I tell you, I think I've gained just about as much from 4-H, having worked in it for 30-some years as a assistant agent and as a 4-H specialist on the state staff. It's been a tremendous gain for me, and I believe I've gained just about as much as any of the 4-H members have, Mr. Harrell, and certainly I want to pay Mr. Harrell a tribute here. His guidance and counsel, although I didn't always agree with him back a few years ago, but
you do it now.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, he wouldn't admit it now, unless both of them retired.
That's right. But his guidance and counsel of my work of 4-H and to me personally made a very satisfying career in 4-H for me, helped to make it a very satisfying career. So I give him a lot of credit for my 30 years of work.
Well, Lyman, you referred to what you have gotten out of 4-H, and I'm sure that what you're saying is true, but I want to tell you that you have given a lot to 4-H, too. So it's certainly not been a one-way street. You've really given of yourself to 4-H also. Well, what is your... When did you first become involved? Like when you were a college student, or...?
No, I came out of the Air Force after World War II and stayed home. And one day, I had applied for extension work at college. And one day, my dad had me digging holes, putting up fences. And the county agent came out and says, Lyman, says the district agent wants you to come to Tarboro It was sometime the first part of January of 1946. He has two county agents that need assistant agents. Uh-huh. And so I went there and was interviewed, and but it was three counties. And of the three, I chose to go to Northampton County. And fortunately, Northampton chose me. So that's where I started, March 6th of 1946 in Northampton County. And I worked there for 4 years until Mr. Harrell gave me an opportunity to come to be on his staff here at the state.
How did you find out about Lyman Dixon over there in Northampton County?
Well, I kept a pretty close tab on all of the extension agents and workers, and he did an outstanding job with the program in a county prior to this time that had very little success in 4-H as his count. What he said about Greene County was typical of the majority of the counties in eastern North Carolina in the early days of 4-H. And Lyman was selected on the basis of his contribution and the leadership demonstrated in building a program of 4-H in a county where I figured we needed a lot of men like Lyman to go out in the other counties in the state. And I, while he's bragging about me, I would have to say that with or without actual 4-H experience, no one ever gave any more dedicated or devoted service to a program than Lyman. And as he said, we didn't always agree, but when we did agree, that was it.
Well, I think that can be said any time, Mr. Harrell, if people are rational, thinking individuals who are interested in the common cause, which in this particular case is 4-H, you'll usually come to some kind of agreement on that. What about Merle? Do you remember discovering her?
Discovered her when she was crying because the cow stepped on her foot.
Now, you didn't decide you were going to make her a district agent back
then.
Well,
I had nothing to do with that because she was a home agent first, and then the district agent and the administrative staff promoted her to the district job.
I never had a better job, though, than being a 4-H agent in Wake County. I still say that was one of the highlights of my career, Wally.
Well, you know, that's got to be satisfying. And when you were first, I assume you were assigned, Lyman, to go to some schools. Was that how you got involved in 4-H initially, as an assistant agent?
Yes.
And from that point, did you just sort of learn to love it better than any other part of your work?
Oh, yes. I often got accused in Northampton County of spending too much time on 4-H. You know, back then, Mr. Harrell, you were supposed to spend so much time on 4-H and as assistant agent, and then some more time on adult program. Well, I don't know whether it was because of insecurity on my part or what, but I spent about 98% of my time doing 4-H club work. And it was real rewarding and satisfying. I don't know of any other profession that a person can have as many satisfying experiences, good experiences of all types, as one working with people, and especially in the 4-H program. I tell you, after I learned something about 4-H and through study and through going to training conferences and all, you learn to see the youngsters, boys and girls, grow as a result of programs or activities or experiences that you involve them in. And this was most satisfying to me. I think probably the greatest satisfying experience I had in 4-H, Mr. Harrell, was attempting to operate the Roanoke Island 4-H camp for 7 or 8 years. It was just a real delight to see the boys and girls come in on Monday for a week at camp. And, of course, I had my own philosophy, maybe some of it anyway, about how the camp should be operated. But if I could carry them at a pace that by the end of the week they had reached the peak as far as enjoyment and as far as learning experiences, and if I could do that, then you could see the growth. Mm-hmm. And this was not only true in camp, but this was most of the way I saw it. But as I look back, I was reading in a magazine the other day where one of my 4-H members in Northampton County, he's an ordained minister, and I've known that for a long time, but I didn't know where he'd gotten to. But this one fella, one boy, his family had never been an extension family up till he became a 4-H member, Merrill. Mm-hmm. And when I don't know how I started working with him, I don't remember, but we started working with him and got him interested in the Swine Project, and his dad fell in, and in 4 years' time or less, his daddy was coming into the extension office, had never darkened the office prior to that, so I was told. And then another young man, he's a rather large grading contractor now with heavy equipment. He was about 12 years of age when we learned about his setup. He was from a broken family, and through a civic club who was giving out some gilts to the 4-H club members in Halifax and Northampton counties, we got him a gilt. Well, this young fellow at that time was on the verge of becoming involved in maybe some problems with another group of youngsters. And he turned out to be a good livestock producer during his 4-H career. He could go out and judge animals. He even went out to auctions and bought animals with what little pocket change he could gather. And from one brood sow, he went to about 8 there in about a 4-year span as a teenager. And he knew how to do it. But now he's a big grading contractor in this state. And I hadn't seen him for years until a few years ago. I was eating lunch in a restaurant down in Washington, North Carolina. And I had noticed this fellow would table two from him, but I didn't recognize him. Finally, he came over and said, you don't know me, do you? I said, well, I have to admit, I don't. And he told me who he was and told me what he was doing. But since I've kept up with him, know where he is now. And, now, that was one of the most satisfying single instances in my career, because this boy was right on the verge of going in the wrong direction, and he admits it himself.
Wally, can I break tradition one little minute and speak, even though I told you I wasn't? I'd like to point out that having worked with Mr. Lyman Dixon as a 4-H'er coming along, district 4-H officer and the like, that not only did he direct his camp that way, but he was a big part in State 4-H Club Week and Club Congress later, walking along through the week and hitting that high point on Thursday evening. And in regards to that, some of the people that are here are familiar with the traditional clover closing ceremony that closes the club week. And I'd like to ask Mr. Dixon, as well as Mr. Harrell, for just a little bit of information on how we arrived at such a magnificently beautiful closing ceremony and why Mr. Harrell chose Follow the Gleam as a traditional song that is sung as the 4-H'ers file out of the clover after some 1,000 to 1,500 4-H'ers have assembled in a clover, what, Mr. Dixon, maybe 100 yards across?
Yes. Tremendous.
You said our time was up.
That's what I understood.
Okay, so we'll pick up on that answer on the second tape, then. That's where we'll start.